Welcome to The Crimes of Robert Picton, a podcast series delving into one of the most chilling and monstrous cases in criminal history. I'm Mark, your host, and for the past weeks I found myself grappling with the sheer horror and revulsion evoked by the atrocities committed by Robert Willie Picton. Picton's story is one that shakes me to the core, making it very difficult to remain detached. His depravity knows no bounds. A man who reveled in the slaughter of thousands of animals on his farm with blatant disregard for basic decency or sanitary conditions. It's outrageous that his barbaric practices went unchecked by authorities for over two decades, a testament to the systemic failures that allowed his reign of terror to persist. What sickens me most is Picton's treatment of his victims. He viewed them as nothing more as disposable commodities, akin to the livestock he callously butchered. His predatory instincts and deviant desires knew no bounds. As he ruthlessly preyed upon vulnerable women, snuffing out their lives without remorse, the failures of the justice system are glaringly evident in Picton's case. Despite numerous red flags and near misses, he continued to evade accountability, leaving a trail of devastation in his wake. The drop charges in 1997 served as a chilling harbinger of horrors to come, giving Picton free rein to escalate his atrocities until his eventual apprehension in 2002. But it's not just Picton himself that fills me with disgust. It's the complicity of those who enabled him, turning a blind eye to his heinous acts, or actively aiding in their execution. Pain inflicted upon the victim's family is immeasurable. Compounded by a society that often fails to recognize their suffering or demand justice. As we dwell deeper into Picton's crimes, it's impossible to ignore the broader implications. His case serves as a stark reminder of the evils that lurk among us and the pressing need for systemic reform to prevent future tragedies. Please join me as we explore the dark depths of Robert Picton's depravity, confronting uncomfortable truths and seeking justice for his countless victims. This is The Crimes of Robert Picton. Before diving into such disturbing details of Robert Picton's case, I feel compelled to issue a solemn warning to our listeners. The subject matter we are about to explore is deeply harrowing and may be distressing to some. As host of this podcast, I encountered immense difficulty in researching this case, often needing to take long breaks to process the sheer horror of it all. My heart goes out to the families who have been profoundly affected by this nightmare, as well as the frontline workers whose tireless effort in investigating this case have taken a heavy toll on their physical and mental well-being. The resilience in the face of such darkness is truly commendable. The events surrounding Robert Picton are beyond shocking. One of my primary motivations in delving into the story is to ensure that the details are preserved and archived. However, recent developments have sparked controversy and concern. The RCMP proposal to dispose of evidence from Robert Picton's farm has met with strong opposition from victims' families and advocates for women's rights. They argue vehemently against the destruction of this crucial evidence, including DNA samples collected from the farm, citing its potential significance in ongoing investigations. the debate over wherever revolves around the possibility of its relevance in future inquiries and the necessity of retaining it for potential developments in the case. Despite differing opinions, the decision remains contentious, with stakeholders advocating for the preservation of this evidence to ensure that vital information is not lost to time. In 2020, the RCMP initiated the process of seeking judicial authorization to dispose of exhibits during the 2007 trial. This extensive list includes items such as a woman's platform shoe and high heels, a pink pillowcase, and a syringe, each potentially holding valuable clues to unraveling the full extent of Picton's atrocity. A letter titled "A Call to Preserve Evidence in the Picton Case" has garnered widespread support from nearly 36 organizations across Canada, including Indigenous women's rights groups, academics, and Vancouver East MP Jenny Kwan, co-signed by Sue Brown, a director and staff lawyer with Justice for Girls, and Dr. Sasha Reed, creator of a database on missing persons and unsolved murders in Canada. The letter emphasizes the importance of preserving evidence for the family of victims who continue to seek justice. For the families of those victims, justice has been elusive, and they still hold on hope that one day they will show what happened to their loved ones, a later state. Disposal of exhibits will squash any remaining hope that they have. Their perception that their daughters, mothers, sisters, and aunties are less important than the space required to keep that evidence. Both Sue and Dr. Reed expressed surprise at the police's intention to dispose of evidence, particularly given the multiple of cases associated with Picton. Sue Brown questioned the timing, stating, 20 years is a very short period of time in the life of an unsolved homicide case, not to mention 50 unsolved homicide cases. Why are they getting rid of this evidence so soon? In addition to calling for a moratorium on disposing of Picton's evidence, the letter advocates for legislative reform on managing evidence from unsolved cases, increased RCMP accountability, prioritizing resources for unsolved missing women's cases related to Picton. The RCMP acknowledged the impact of the Picton investigation and the trial on Canadians, especially victims' family, emphasizing that the evidence has been captured and retained despite the use of the term disposal in their application. Any disposal of property, the RCMP stated, would be decided by the courts and would not affect future prosecutions. BC Attorney General Nikki Sharma stressed the importance of sensitivity and appropriate engagement in any process of evidence disposal, noting the immense grief and pain experienced by victims' families. The province stands ready to provide assistance and support in ensuring a respectful, culturally sensitive approach to dealing with the evidence. When contacted for comment, Public Safety Canada directed inquiries to the RCMP, citing their role as a primary authority on the matter. The DNA evidence tied to Robert Picton's farm spans back to the 1980s through to 2001, revealing a mass burial ground for human remains. At Picton's trial emerged about 80 unidentified DNA profiles were detected on evidence from his farm, with roughly half belonging to males and the other half to females. Additionally, the remains or DNA of 33 women were found on the Port Coquitlam farm, highlighting the extent of the tragedy and the number of female victims linked to the property. The presence of male DNA introduced complexity into the case, suggesting the involvement of multiple individuals beyond Picton himself and underscoring a need for thorough forensic analysis to unravel the mysteries surrounding the farm. During the trial, unknown male DNA was discovered on key pieces of evidence, even on women's teeth, deepening the mystery surrounding the investigation. The discovered highlighted the presence of additional individuals beyond Picton, emphasizing the importance of thorough analysis to understand the full scope of events on the farm. The presence of this male DNA has been a subject of intrigue. During cross-examination in the trial, defense lawyers revealed that a DNA profile of an unidentified man has been associated with the partial remains of two women found in a freezer, despite rigorous procedures to prevent contamination. The presence of this unidentified male DNA on remains and on other items in the freezer raised further questions, highlighting the ongoing mystery and the complexity of the investigation. In reflecting on the Picton's case, I can't help but feel there's a sort of sanitization at play, a feeling that certain aspects are being smoothed over and or sanitized. Just a few weeks back, I made the journey with my family to the Picton farm. We joined dozens of friends, family members of the victims at the former site in Port Coquitlam. There was flowers, posters, red dresses, and we held a candlelight vigil to honor the memories of their loved ones. And the very next day, the tributes, the flowers, the pictures, the candles was removed by someone unknown. This is unsettling, mean, however, not surprising. The grim reality of this case is stark. The remains or the DNA of 33 women that were discovered on Picton's property following the searches initiated after reports of illegal firearms in 2002. The magnitude of the investigation is staggering. Over 200,000 exhibits were seized, including three freezers containing more than 400 meat products. Picton, sentenced to life in prison in 2007, offered a semblance of closure, yet the families of his victims continue to face an uphill battle for justice. Recently, they fought against applications by the BC RCMP to dispose of or destroy or return an estimate 14,000 exhibits linked to the case. As I endeavor to preserve and to share the events of this case from a storytelling perspective, I am acutely aware of the delicate balance between recounting the facts and respecting the victims. The material is undeniably dark, heartbreaking, and infuriating. My aim is to provide a clear breakdown of events leading up to Picton's arrest and the subsequent evidence, all while remaining sensitive to the profound impact on the families affected by his action. I offer this narrative with the utmost discretion, recognizing the deep emotional toll it may exact. Thank you for listening, and please proceed with caution.